This is The 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman, in for Brian Mackey. Psilocybin is a hallucinogenic substance derived from certain types of mushrooms. It's currently classified at the federal level as a Schedule 1 drug, and that makes it harder for researchers to study it and also means people could get into legal trouble for using it. But there's been an effort nationwide to make psilocybin more accessible for mental health treatment. Oregon became the first state to decriminalize psilocybin and legalize its supervised use in 2020, followed by Colorado in 2022. And State Senator Rachel Ventura hopes Illinois will soon join them. She's a Democrat representing Illinois' 43rd Senate District, which includes Joliet and other Southwest suburbs. Senator Ventura, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
A note to our listeners, in order to make our schedules align, we recorded this conversation on Tuesday afternoon, but in a few minutes, we will be joined by a researcher who studies psilocybin for mental health treatment, and if you have a question about that, you can give us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455, and we'll get you in the queue while we hear from Senator Ventura. So to start, can you tell us about the Cure Act? What does this bill propose to do?
Yeah, so essentially it creates a system so that individuals can utilize psilocybin in a supervised setting. So it is adult supervised use, and you would be able to go to essentially like a healing center or a facility that would administer this, and there would be a little bit of prep work and some integration afterwards, but it would allow you to utilize psilocybin either because you're curious or because you have maybe a mental health, especially like a depression or anxiety, treatment resistant. So a lot of people have tried SSRIs or talk therapy, and their brain essentially gets stuck in the same brainwave pathways. And psilocybin allows for other pathways to open up so that you might be able to finally break through that stuckness and find real cure to your mental health ailments.
Would this bill also, it would not legalize it for recreational use, I understand, but would it also decriminalize the use of psilocybin?
Yeah, so this would remove it from a Schedule 1 in the state of Illinois. I mean, federally, it would still be on Schedule 1. And a lot of it has to do with the ability to research it. Last year, state of Illinois put $5 million into researching psilocybin for veterans. But unfortunately, those dollars cannot be used in our state because of the legal status of it. And so we worked with the VA and some other facilities outside of Illinois and in DC and Maryland to utilize those dollars. So really to maximize the research that can be done in our state, we really need to try to decriminalize that aspect, but also to just take away the stigma of this particular type of medicine. I mean, we have drugs like opioids, which are they're a Schedule 3 and they are FDA approved, but we know that they can cause massive harm. Whereas you have psilocybin that kind of got caught up in the 70s of the war on drugs, and a lot of things are swept under different schedule numbers. And this one's Schedule 1, which says that there's no medicinal value. With all of the testing that's happened, you know, even all the way back until the 1950s, when we first started looking at this to more recently, we definitely know there's a medicinal value here. So to redefine this as a medicine and not as a drug is really important.
So this isn't the first time that a bill like this has been proposed in Illinois. I wonder if you could talk about what barriers similar bills faced in prior years and how you're hoping to overcome those barriers now.
Yeah, so last year, Representative LaShawn Ford filed HB1, and I also filed a similar bill in the Senate for psilocybin. The bills did not move last year, and so he and I got together at the end of last May and kind of talked about what some of the issues were. This bill initially was drafted on how Oregon had designed their program. And so a few things that we found is that Oregon is all under their state public health. And the way we legalized cannabis in the state, even medical cannabis, was under a number of state agencies. So that was one of the first things that we looked at, is that the bill was not in its final stage, let's say, to really have movement. So we worked with the state agencies this summer. We had discussions with the governor's office to kind of shape this bill that it would fit Illinois in a better capacity. And then more recently, after a subject hearing with the Senate, I spoke across the aisle with the Republicans and how we might utilize this bill moving forward. There were a couple of concerns, some of it on the age limits that we had put in and some of it on who might be able to get a facilitator license. And so we've made a couple of tweaks with that, and we are hoping to get some bipartisan support. I think the barricades or the hurdles that we've overcome, some of it has nothing to do with what we're doing. It has to do with the conversation that's happened nationally, especially when it comes to first responders, law enforcement, veterans who have really suffered from PTSD, but even more so that the mental health community that has seen things like complex PTSD and how to treat those things in a way that is more meaningful. So while that conversation is happening at a national level, we've really kind of brought those voices here to Illinois to talk about how this could really help people who are struggling with that stuckness that I talked about and take the next step in their healing and recovery. And so this is definitely a non or bipartisan bill in the fact that mental health can impact any of us. And I think so many of the individuals who listen to the Senate hearing could identify their own family members or themselves maybe, or their friends who have struggled with some of the same things that people who gave testimony on. But the difference is the individuals giving testimony talked about the turning point that psilocybin provided for them and the ongoing treatment and how, not necessarily even the medicine treatment, but the integration, the therapy treatments afterwards really set them on a different path that was never provided to them with under traditional treatments. And I think that hope that can provide people who are struggling is so strong that it's, you know, is it really the government's responsibility to provide that? Because right now we're the ones who are preventing it. And I think that spoke volumes.
State Senator Rachel Ventura is a Democrat representing Illinois' 43rd Senate District. Thanks so much for taking the time.
I definitely appreciate being here. And if you like this bill, please contact your House rep or senator and let them know the importance of passing it.
If you're just tuning in, this is The 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman, and we're back live. We're talking about efforts to legalize psilocybin for adult supervised use. And we're joined now by Dr. Josh Woolley. He's an associate professor at UCSF and a psychiatrist at the San Francisco VA Medical Center. Dr. Woolley, thanks for being here. We're coming up on a break in just a minute, but I wanted to squeeze in one quick question to you. Can you just tell us a little bit about your research program and maybe the elevator pitch, high level, what it is that you study?
Sure. I direct the Translational Psychedelic Research Program. We call ourselves TRIPR. And what we do is we study psychedelics paired with psychotherapy for severe neuropsychiatric disorders. And the way that is done, which you just heard a little bit in that previous conversation, is someone receives a certain amount of what's called preparation psychotherapy, about 6 hours usually. And then they have a high dose psychedelic experience, usually psilocybin, and then they have some more integration psychotherapy, maybe another 6 hours. That's spread out over 2 to 3 weeks. And when we and other groups do it that way, there are very large and durable effects on things like depression, anxiety, substance use disorders. So that's what we've been studying.
Thank you, Dr. Woolley. We're excited to dive into all of this with you. If you have a question, you're listening, our number to call in is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We're going to take a short break. This is The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman. We're talking about efforts to legalize psilocybin for adult supervised use. Two states have already taken that step in recent years, Colorado and Oregon, and there's a bill in Illinois that would open up that possibility for people to gain access to psilocybin here for mental health treatment in a therapeutic setting. For the rest of the show, we'll be speaking with a psychiatrist who studies the use of psilocybin for mental health treatment. Dr. Josh Woolley is a psychiatrist at the San Francisco VA Medical Center and an associate professor at UCSF. Dr. Woolley, we were just talking before the break about your research on the effect of psilocybin coupled with psychotherapy for the treatment of depression. And you mentioned you've seen some promising results. I'd love to hear more about that. And also, if you could talk about the importance of coupling this, the drug treatment with the psychotherapy.
Yes. So our group and others have studied it for study this psilocybin therapy, this package that I was just describing for many different disorders. But the one that has been studied the most is for major depressive disorder or depression. There have been two large trials, multi-center trials, and they both showed that after this, you know, single dose, one high dose of psilocybin with the psychotherapy, people can feel better for months and months. That's pretty amazing when you think about the other kinds of treatment we have for depression, you know, things like SSRIs and other antidepressants, which can be life-saving, but you have to take every day or they don't work. And for many people, they don't work. Or psychotherapy, regular psychotherapy, that helps a lot of people, but it's slow and it's hard work and it takes a long time. So this, the idea that you could have a treatment that you could give someone that could lead to rapid and durable changes in depression is a really exciting possibility.
Listeners, you can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We have a call from Carrie in Pekin, Illinois, on line four. Carrie, are you there?
I am.
All right, go ahead with your question.
Well, you answered part of it, and then about the effectiveness of the dosage, would you, or the effectiveness of the therapy, would people come back after a few months to almost redo their therapy, or?
That's a great question that we don't actually know the answer to. I would say that the research is exciting, but and promising, but the, you know, it's not FDA approved yet. No one has done research yet about just how long people will be better for and what we should do if it starts to wear off. But that is the idea. The idea would be that there people might require another dose, if you will. But how frequently and what that would look like is still, you know, being developed and tested.
Is there a way of getting into these trials?
Yeah, at the moment, you know, there are many, many more people who want to be part of these trials than there are trials, which, you know, I think speaks to the sort of need and the hope and the excitement of people and how, you know, the treatments that we have available aren't sufficient. You know, the best way to do that is to go to the website clinicaltrials.gov and, you know, search for psilocybin or depression. That's the, you know, government's website that lists all clinical trials actually around the whole world. And, you know, that's the way to find trials near you.
Thanks so much, Carrie, for that call. We really appreciate it. And if you'd like to join us, if you're listening and have a question for Dr. Woolley, we're at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Dr. Woolley, what do we know about how psilocybin works? I know there's a lot of unanswered questions, as you kind of nodded to in your response to Carrie, but what is it about this drug? It's a psychedelic. People probably know about magic mushrooms. What can you tell us?
Well, that's a great question, and it's elusive, I would say. you know, what we do know is when it's delivered in this way that I described, people describe feeling a lot better for long periods of time. So that's sort of empirical. People have seen this. Why it does that is a difficult question to answer, but there are several hypotheses. One aspect is that people describe, the patients describe, you know, having deep insights and breakthrough emotional experiences that they say really helps them. On the other hand, in animal models of depression, you know, in like rodent models, these drugs also have long-lasting antidepressant-like effects. And the rodents presumably are not having breakthrough emotional experiences. So, you know, it really is a complex question. We know the drugs have, you know, psychedelic psilocybin has a lot of different effects that could be good for people who have depression. The one that has gotten the most press is that it seems to induce what's called neuroplasticity. It makes neurons regrow their axons and make new synapses and make new connections and dendrites. And we know that depression or chronic stress does the opposite. So that's one hypothesis for why or how it can be an antidepressant. It also kind of speaks to this other unusual element, this pairing of the psychotherapy with the drug, which is very unusual, right? We don't have any other treatments that are like that. And one idea about that is, you know, psychedelics are pretty popular. You know, over 10% of Americans have tried a psychedelic, and that number was from 2015. So the number now is probably much higher. But not everyone who goes to Burning Man comes back not depressed and not wanting to use drugs, even though they've used a psychedelic. And so that's a little bit of a paradox. The way that many of us think about this, our working model, is that the psychedelic, the psilocybin, is inducing this neuroplasticity, this changeable state in the brain, and that the psychotherapy is helping to shape that in a positive way. That's a hypothesis, but there is a fair amount of evidence to suggest it's a good one. It's a good hypothesis.
That's fascinating. And it's really interesting, the point you mentioned about the long-lasting effects from a single round of treatment. And granted, a single round, it is pretty time-intensive, as you described these long sessions before, during, and after, and the follow-up. Can you talk a little bit about the risks that could be involved in taking psilocybin, whether it's because someone's not a good candidate for it, or if they're taking it recreationally without sort of, you know, I think in the Illinois bill, the emphasis is on supervised adult use. So what are the risks to trying it out recreationally?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And it's something that, you know, we in the field are really grappling with. The trials that I was describing, the research that I do and other groups do, is highly controlled. So to be in one of our studies, someone shows up and they get, you know, screening, they have an EKG, they get medical screening, they have psychological screening, and then they work with licensed mental health providers and psychiatrists in a hospital-like setting. But it's, you know, it's set up to be like a living room setting, but it's, you know, in a medical center. And so there's a lot of oversight and a lot of, expert supervision. And when we do it that way, people have really good outcomes, and adverse outcomes are minimal, though not zero. There are people who have anxiety reactions. They have a difficult time. They might become, distressed or have an existential kind of crisis. These have all been described. They're rare and manageable in the setting that I'm talking about, but they're not zero. But again, the studies are also looking at people who have often severe mental illnesses. Right. So you have to keep all of that in mind and thinking about the risk benefit. Absolutely. Then there's like recreational use. I mentioned, you know, Burning Man, or people who just, you know, go and use psychedelics for fun. That's what most of the people in America who have used a psychedelic do. And the risks of that also are not super high, but they're not zero. And you hear about these things in the news, you know, someone uses LSD, for example, and sort of gets into trouble with the police, or, you know, does something foolish. And then there are also growing realization that a small subset of people can have, you know, persisting adverse effects. There was just a case that was in the news in California of a pilot who used mushrooms on his own. And then a couple of days later, he went on a flight and he had what seemed like a derealization experience where he felt like he was in a dream. That was all in the news. That is the sort of thing that also can happen. And so these drugs are not benign. They're powerful, and sometimes people have problems. Having someone with you when you use a psychedelic decreases a lot of those problems, because some of them are just acute, like you're not thinking clearly while you're on a high dose of a psychedelic and maybe you run into traffic. So having someone with you prevents that. That's really important. What the worry that I have and other researchers like me is for these supervised settings, like what they're doing in Oregon, and what it sounds like what Illinois is proposing, is that it's a little bit like a pseudo FDA, right? It's supervised, but it's not, you can't make treatment claims because that's what the FDA regulates, but it's kind of non-specific healing. And that's a kind of a gray zone that is very challenging. For example, like in our studies, you know, having a personal history of psychosis is an exclusion. So we really don't know how safe psychedelics are in people who have had psychosis in the past.
I see.
So you know, something like that, or cardiac issues. That's another place where, you know, these dosing centers won't ever have the kind of medical screening that we use in our trials, but that probably is overkill for a lot of people. So how to manage that sort of risk stratification is really a challenge that needs to be worked out.
We're speaking with Dr. Josh Woolley. He's an associate professor at UCSF and a psychiatrist at the San Francisco VA Medical Center. We had a caller from Urbana who didn't want to go on the air, but you know, she had some question around whether psilocybin can be patented, if pharmaceutical companies are taking this up. And you already spoke to side effects. She had a question about side effects. But what do we know about in terms of FDA and the progress towards getting an FDA-approved version of this drug, which would actually open it up not just on a state-by-state level, as some states have been doing, but nationwide?
It's really interesting, and it's a great question. And it kind of really shows some of the gaps or, you know, in our systems. So psilocybin is an ingredient in these hallucinogenic mushrooms, and there turns out there are a lot of them, different species, and mushrooms work pretty well. That's what most people who have used a psychedelic have used, and they grow pretty widely. But no one is studying the whole mushroom, really, because it's too variable. Now, there are several companies, there are at least two, that are trying to bring synthetic psilocybin through the FDA, and they have done these large multi-center trials. And they don't have what's called a composition of matter patent, because psilocybin was synthesized a long time ago, and you can't patent the molecule. But they have a patent on the making of their particular version of the molecule, even though their molecule doesn't seem to be any better than any other versions of the psilocybin, if that makes sense. And they've made a lot of progress, and it looks like they're going to at least one of them or both of them are going to be applying to the FDA for review next year,
fascinating.
What most people think.
Okay, well, this is something we'll continue to follow. There's so much more we could discuss, but we really appreciate your time today. Dr. Joshua Woolley is an associate professor at UCSF and a psychiatrist at the San Francisco VA Medical Center. Thank you so much, Dr. Woolley, for joining us on the 21st Show.
My pleasure.
That's all the time we have for today. Before we go, will you consider joining our texting group? You can join by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. Again, text the word TALK, T-A-L-K, to 217-803-0730. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda, with special thanks to Alyssa Eaton for help with today's show. Our digital producer is Damian Contreras. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Christine Herman, in for Brian Mackey. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk with you again tomorrow.